This is football. I am Kevin Clark. Seth Walter joins for a draft recap mailbag. Seth is an analytics expert at ESPN, so we got a bunch of questions about how teams spent their picks, how teams went about the draft. We also got into who won and lost the draft. This time of year, you've heard so much about, this guy's flexibility, this guy's hips are stiff or whatever. I think after the draft, the best way to go about it is to figure out who played the game as smartly as possible on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. That's what we're going to do here. For the more football-y stuff, the actual scouting reports, the actual anecdotes, Bruce Feldman's going to join on Tuesday morning. He is one of the smartest college football voices ever. How about that? Ever? Who's smarter? And we're going to go through some of the guys he thought slipped in the draft and shouldn't have, based on who he's been around. He's been basically around every program, every coach. And so that's going to be an awesome episode. Ladies and gentlemen, Seth Walter.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
All right, Seth Walter is here, analytics guru. He has worn that analytics hat that the listener cannot see for a long time. We did a thing on Friday night, you and myself and Spencer Hall, friend of the show, eventual friend of the show, Harry Douglas and the Harry Lyles. You just stood on a separate set and talked about analytics. What's going on, Seth?
Not too much. How are you? Long time no see.
Yeah. All right. So we're doing a mailbag to recap the draft. And we got some really good questions, but I want to start here because no one's going to actually ask this question because it's so stupid and reductive. And also completely, like, we're always wrong. No one has ever answered this question correctly. Seth Walter, who won the draft?
You know what? I'm going to give the most annoying cliche answer. I spent last night looking to figure it. I was like, it's got to be somebody else. Don't do it.
Oh,
it's
no.
The Eagles. I'm sorry.
That's not what I thought you were going to say. Okay.
What did you think I was going to say?
Bears? I thought you were going to say the Bears. Yeah.
Oh, no. That's the worst answer. Okay.
Well, no. The way to win the draft is to draft skill guys people have heard of.
Well, yeah. Well, okay. Yes. That's and like later than
multiple.
Which is not the reason why I give it to the Eagles. Okay, I interpret this question as being like, who improved the most from what we expected on Thursday morning to right now? And so, to me, that's the Eagles. I think I know we're going to talk about them as well in a couple of different ways here. So I'm annoyed at myself already for picking them. and because everybody picks them every year. But what Roseman does with trades, what Howie did with trades in this draft generated a lot of extra value, and they were able to take players at key positions. They took players that went later than expected, which is not as big of a deal as I think people make it out to be. This is probably the when you take Cooper DeJean at 40, that's good, and maybe you got a little bit of value, but like teams passed on him from. Mm-hmm. You can't think of him. We should no longer think of him as being the 23rd best player in the class or whatever.
I completely agree.
Teams passed like 17 times on him. And that is the most, the teams have the most, the draft is the most efficient. That's the market telling us that he was a second round player. And I tend to believe that. So to me, what Philadelphia did, doing all three of those things and avoiding all the pitfalls. When they trade up cheap. They trade down way more than they need, way more than anybody else. So they make up for it. They make up for those cheap trade ups. They don't reach for players. They don't take, they didn't take players that were at non-premium positions early in the draft. Like, those are all the ways that you can do it. I really wanted to say Jacksonville because they made a killer trade with Minnesota in round one, but I felt like they reached on other players in the draft, and that really starts to give back some of that value.
Couple things. I completely agree on the consensus big board thing. I believe, if not mistaken, the Eagles were second only to the Lions as far as being able to get value for the consensus big board. I think that matters in the sense that it just shows you're not reaching for anything, but more often than not, the reason somebody's slipping 30 to 40 to 50 picks or five rounds is there's something we don't know. And that happened yesterday. It was funny when guys I really liked are going fifth round, sixth round, I'm texting scouts, I'm texting people I know. And every answer I'd get back onto why they weren't a second round pick was pretty convincing. It was, oh, this guy has a bad back. Or this guy, I got one feedback that was like, this guy was a massive liar in his interviews, which I've never heard before. I don't really want to divulge what it is, but it was basically, it's like, there's some biographical stuff that the guy was like, nope, not true. Not true. And they were like, okay. And so there's an old interrogation tactic or counter interrogation tactic, which is always admit what they know. Like, always admit what they know. That's my advice to draft prospects as well. If they have your sheet, just name, age, height, weight, all that stuff, right? Anyway, oftentimes there's a reason for that. I mean, we saw that with Peyton Wilson, who I loved as a player. It comes out that Peyton Wilson's missing an ACL. How comfortable are you not having one ACL in your linebacker? I don't know. It's up to your doctors on that one, but that's a pretty legitimate reason to fall. For me, I have a couple. I'm going to start with the Commanders. And I don't think I actually end up, and I've flip-flopped on this a million times, I think Drake May is going to end up being better than Jaden Daniels. Just from a pure, maybe even first two or three years. I think that, by the way, I always say geography is destiny with quarterbacks, and somebody sent me a DM last night based off of that, and they showed me Arsene Wenger, the former Arsenal manager, and I guess he had a clip recently where some of different players, and he said that, and I think I agree with this, he said 90% of a player's development in soccer is where he goes. 90%. What he's coached to do, who he's around. I don't think it's 90% for quarterbacks, but I think it's pretty high. And so Drake May going to New England is actually going to hurt because the infrastructure is not as good. But anyway, I want to put that aside for a second. Here's what they do. They get Jaden Daniels 2, Newton in the second round, Sanistril in the second round, Ben Sinnott, who is one of the best athletes in the draft, Luke McCaffrey, who I think is a really good athlete in the third round. I just feel like there's a credibility, and you add in the lineman they signed in free agency. I don't love Cliff Kingsbury. I don't love some of the other stuff they did. Any of the names, anybody who's famous they brought in, like Austin Eckler, Cliff Kingsbury, I don't think this is going to help. But there's a bunch of solid moves, you know, with Newton, with Sanistro, that there's going to be a Dominic Hampton in the fifth round. There's going to be a Dan Quinn style that they're going to play. I think they really helped themselves. And that's kind of what I look at, is how many guys, like, this is a weird thing to say, but I really liked what Tampa did, because they go out and they get a bunch of solid guys. Graham Barton in the interior of the line, Chris Braswell in edge, who Nick Saban raved about in the second round, Tyke Smith, the safety out of Georgia. Like, I'm just looking at this. I think a lot of times, going back to what we were just joking about, but a lot of times it's just who's famous and who dropped you. But I look at who got four guys where I'm like, okay, this is safety. Because we always overrate the ceilings and the contributions of rookies. Always. We always go like, oh, well, this team's pretty good, but they got three really good rookies. That's not really going to help your one. But if you can get three, four guys to raise the floor, raise the credibility of the team, that's where you help yourself as a draft class. Who lost the draft, Seth?
I'm going to say the Rams. And
oh, no.
I felt like I was, you know, we were together on Friday night, so I was really critical of that trade that they made, and this is a big part of it, was their trades. They traded 52, 155, and a future 2 for 39. So just think about this. You're giving up a future second round pick and then some in order just to move within the second round. Mm-hmm. That I don't think we need to do any math to agree that that doesn't make a lot of sense. And that is taking a shiny object right in front of you because you can't wait until next year. And that is really costly. Like, just to put in context, I put these all in last night. That's the most expensive, the highest overpay in day two in the last 6 years, at least. Mm-hmm. That's as far back as I have logged. Ooh. So like, that's a really bad deal. And then that wasn't their only one. They gave up a future. They gave up a future, another future pick to move up in the round. I think it was a four with a three, I think. Now I'm blanking on it. But but to me, when you make those moves, that's like where you really cost yourself. I tend to be someone that doesn't feel like I can pick the draft better than the draft itself. And yeah, so I'm looking at sort of like the structure of what you do that – That's throwing away value. I would have been tempted by Minnesota in this same realm, except that they were able to get McCarthy, only moving up one spot, which was completely different than what we thought on Thursday morning. And so to me, I don't see them in that same light. Yeah,
I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong about that. So they have two first round picks. First of all, Dallas Turner is really good, and I'm going to separate Dallas Turner from what I'm saying here because they got Dallas Turner with good value in a draft that went offense heavy, all this stuff, right? That's great. But the whole maneuvering is they're going to trade up and try to get one of the – the market told us – you said this earlier. The market told us this is a three-quarterback draft because the run on the second half of the top – oh, my God, I can't believe I said it. The run on the second half of the upper half of the first round was a different grouping. Because if those guys were elite, it would have gone 1-6. Okay, that's just how quarterbacks work. So the market was telling us there was three quarterbacks here, and the Vikings were trying to move into that. That's all they were trying to do here, and they couldn't do it. And JJ McCarthy, you're an analytics guy. What percentage chances JJ McCarthy have of becoming Kirk Cousins?
Oh, becoming Kirk Cousins?
I'm serious. The ceiling where you make that much money over that many years and put up those kind of numbers, I think the percentage is lower than we think. Just to hit rate-wise, I think it would be a pleasant surprise if J.J. McCarthy has Kirk Cousins' career.
I think a pleasant surprise is he has Kirk Cousins' career.
It's really hard.
40%, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Like, no, but what I'm saying is it's just really hard to have. Most quarterbacks are not most good.
Exactly.
One of the three in the top is going to be a total washout.
Yes.
Just because of that, that's what happens. Zach Wilson was considered by the market to be the second best quarterback in the draft 4 years ago, and he can't play football. He can't throw the ball past the line of scrimmage with any regularity in any meaningful sense.
So you're arguing Minnesota did have the worst draft. Is that what you're saying?
I am.
Yes. You are. Yeah. Okay.
Because they came out of in the first three picks, three rounds with two players, one of whom I thought was great in Dallas Turner, one of whom I thought was the symptom of a failure to do something else, which to me is indicative of, I mean, I don't know. Like, they gave up a lot of value in order to trade up. I honestly thought there was a grand plan. And if the grand plan was JJ McCarthy, the grand plan was bad.
I can get on board with this because I agree with you in the sense of, yes, like, you know, I guess reframing the question, like, what did we think Thursday morning? Thursday morning, we thought there was a chance they were going to get Drake May, right? There was a chance they could put it all together and do that. And yeah, there clearly was a tier difference. You're right. Take what the market told us. All these teams chose to not trade down, right? Minnesota wasn't willing to move up for McCarthy they probably would have for May. And then they gave an obscene price for Turner in a way that really cost them.
Yes, and this is important to note. Was New England ever trading the pick? Like that's what I'd love to know is like, were they auctioning it in an unreasonable way, or was somebody really close to being able to get in there? Because what it sounds like is New England was going to sit there, even though Elliott Wolf said we're open for business. People say a lot of things. I mean, like Sean Payton was pretending that he was going to draft JJ McCarthy just to get Minnesota to move up. Like, there's a lot of smoke screens this time of year. Like, was your whole plan for not because you were never getting in that top three? That's what I would love to know. This seems like a business intelligence failure to me.
I also wonder that. I mean, to me, when you're at three, like Elliott Wolf could have said, we're not trading the pick, which is like what the Commanders said. And so, and that wouldn't have been that, people would not have really blinked had he said that. So I tend to put a little bit of stock, but I think that what they might have been hoping for was something just so out of control, you know, 5 first round picks, something like that.
All right, well, let's move on. I do like the Vikings as a franchise. I don't mean to impugn them. I think they're smart guys. I just think this, if we're judging on this draft, we're not trying to give lifetime achievement awards here. Like, we're not trying to do like process awards. That's other podcasts. We're not giving a process award. Process of the year. This is not that. All right. We got a great question in the DMs from Brandon. My DMs are a cesspool, but sometimes you get Brandon coming through. Hi, Kevin. For the pod, I would love to understand why everyone goes nuts for Howie each draft, even though a review of his draft record shows he isn't special when it comes to drafting picks. When will his actual draft record make people realize they shouldn't overreact to anything he does? Thanks, Brandon. Awesome question. Okay, so I think I'll defend Howie here for a second. I think he controls the draft in a very meaningful sense. Now, he's able to take a lot of what we consider luck out of the process. He signs guys to prove it deals who are really good, it's a traits based kind of thing. So he's able to evaluate that way. So that's why he's able to manage rosters better. He signs guys really early, which is a former Andy Reid Joe Banner thing. So he controls the cap really well and he doesn't reach. He always understands value. He plays the draft the way it should be played. I don't think anybody is a super drafter, except maybe Ozzie Newsome, who's the GOAT. But yes, he has his hits. He has his misses. I think the reason we all overreact to Howie being draft master is how he plays the draft, not the players he selects.
I completely agree with you. So if you believe that there's no super drafters, and I bet that he probably feels the same way based on his behavior, then this is, and what he does is sort of optimal for that. Now, he gets too much credit in one area, but I still think he deserves like all of the accolades. He gets too much area for taking the falling guy. So you think last year, Nolan Smith, right? He takes him at the very end of the first round. Everyone thought he was sort of a fringe top 10 guy. And it's like, wow. Right. But like the whole league said, this actually wasn't a top 10 guy. So, but what he does better than anyone else, the draft is a massive pitfall for cognitive biases, and no one takes advantage of the other GM's cognitive biases like Howie Roseman. And that is why he is the best at it. 2 years ago, the Saints made like what I would call like the most unforgivable trade because it was so bad. They moved down like 90 picks and gave up a future two just to move a first-round pick from 23 into 2022. So they just moved it 1 year forward, but they weren't just moving it in time.
I remember this.
And they made that deal with it resulted in Trevor Penning, which is not the important part. They made that deal with the Eagles. Where were the other 30 GMs offering just a slightly better deal than that? That is an awful deal 100 times out of 100, and Roseman's the one who is there to take advantage of it. And you want to be that guy. Take advantage of that. I think they traded with Houston. Right, here we go. 120, they traded from 123 to 127 and got a future 5 out of it. Okay, it's not like the sexiest pick. They got a 5th round pick for moving down 4 spots in round 4. Like, take advantage of Nick Caserio in that spot. And that's what Roseman does.
So the other thing is he plans really well. He understands some costs. Like Jalen Hurts in the second round was inspired. Like understanding stacking at positions. He never, I don't think, maybe I'm wrong here. I'm sure some of the receivers, feels like he never drafts for need. That's the one thing. I think he really does, maybe that's the wrong way to phrase it. He drafts on his principles of positional value, which is trenches and cornerbacks, and then if those guys are taken care of, quarterback. Like, he's never going to randomly, now he'll get a mid-round running back, but I'm talking about like first two rounds, it's going to be trenches, cornerback. I mean, it's going to be tackle, within the structure of what he wants. Yeah, 100%. It's going to be trenches. So, yeah, like Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith, Tyler Steen, like Keely Ringo. Give that draft class another year, okay? But like 2021, good example. Devonta Smith, Landon Dickerson. So those two, I'm looking at value. So the three most valuable players according to Pro Football Reference in that class were those two and then Kenneth Gainwell on the Eagles. But you're getting two franchise pillars with Smith and Dickerson, which is all you can ask for when you have what? Something like 10 picks there. Even, you know, Jalen Reagor goes first, but then they get the quarterback of the future and Jalen Hurts in the second round. So it's not about anything other than he understands the probabilities of it and he's able to play the draft well. So that's it. So that's it. To answer your question, Brandon, you are right that Howie picking the players is overrated. 1,000,000%. Guess who probably agrees? Howie Roseman. All right. So Joel, this is a tough one. What is the most generous case from the Falcons drafting Michael Penix at 8? Seems like they are betting against Kirk Cousins' success. I threw this one to you and I said, man, I'll think about it, but I don't really have anything because there's no contract idea that makes any sense here as far as cost control, because even when Penix is playing, you're going to have the dead money from Kirk Cousins. If he really does sit 4 or 5 years, like Terry Fontenot said, it would be a great problem to have. I think he was kind of being facetious there. But if he does sit, you'd have to start paying him real deal money. Not dissimilar to Jordan Love, but at least we got to see what Jordan Love looked like and all that. And Jordan Love is really good. And also Jordan Love has had an offensive head coach who could sit him in and just teach him the process and all that stuff. There's not a lot of generosity here. Before I get to you, I will say Mark Grimondi, who's the ESPN's new Falcons reporter, quoted Fontenot saying, so they asked him, you didn't draft a cornerback. And he said, well, we'd have liked to have added that, but you don't want to force or reach something. Oops. Hey, Seth, what do you got?
The most generous take is that when you hit on a first-round quarterback, the surplus value, the value that you generate is just so on another level from other positions that it can be worth it a lot of the time to take a first round QB. If it's a true consensus first round QB, which Penix sort of was. And the second part would be that the value of a backup quarterback is huge and you could potentially have gotten a really good one. I don't buy any of that. I don't think that, like, that's the most generous take. I'm telling you, I don't think that makes any sense. The problem is it's reasonable to take Penix at 8. It is reasonable to pay Kirk Cousins $100 million guaranteed. When you do them both together, they detract from one another. The way you win the Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins, which is the point, that's why you got Kirk Cousins, to try and win the Super Bowl with him, is to have a stacked roster around him. You can win the Super Bowl with Cousins if you have a stacked roster. They don't have a stacked roster. They have good building blocks. If they hit a home run on this draft, then maybe they could be something like that. But pick 8 was like a big part of that. I wrote when they signed Darnell Mooney, that's a nice 3. Okay, you add one of those top 3 receivers at number 8, you're really cooking. And they could have done that. They could have had Odunze there, and they didn't. And then and now you're just left with too many holes. I think it's I don't think it makes any sense.
George Plimpton, great author, wrote a book about golf like in the 60s, and he was talking about how he could never swing a golf club because he felt like in his brain that his body was being controlled by like little men like in each limb, and all of them were doing completely different things, like all of them that had never met, and like the left arm and the right arm and the legs and all, they're all doing little things, and he's got these little tiny guys in his body who are controlling things, and they're everything's going haywire. To me, it feels like the people who made the decision to draft Michael Penix at 8 had never met the people who decided to sign Kirk Cousins for $90 million guaranteed. Because you only sign Kirk Cousins if you want to win and add credibility now. because they could have won the division each of the last 2 years if they had chosen the correct quarterback. They finally chose the correct quarterback. They finally chose a quarterback who can execute exactly what a coach wants. And then they say, oh, by the way, the thing we did for 2024 and 2025, we're going to undo that. We're going to take a premium pick and use it for 2026. That doesn't make any sense. It would have been significantly, if you actually wanted to maximize the future, it would probably would have been smarter to just trade that pick for future first round picks. So
I'm sorry to say,
Joel, to answer your question, there is that was the most generous case.
Yeah.
Is there something else they could have done? We'll be back with Seth after this.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and up, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. Or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050. Or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Question from Donald. How long until Odunze has the career yardage record for the Bears? Now, there's a great, our friend Danny Parkins, I did not see a clip of this, but I saw the transcript, said to Rome Odunze, do you know who holds the Bears receiving record? Rome Odunze, friend of the show, said Brandon Marshall. Parkins and Spiegel said, good guess, it's Johnny Morris. It's an old record. How many does he have? Odunze asked. 5,059. Odunze responded in ellipsis, his career. So, the floor, the expectation should be Caleb Williams throwing for 4,000 yards, a Bears record, and Rome Odunze within his rookie contract having the Bears receiving record. And is that a reasonable expectation, Seth Wilder?
It's not a reasonable expectation. I think it's definitely in the playing cards. When I watched that clip and I thought when he said like in a career, I was thinking like my first I was like as opposed to a season. Like, this guy's really bullish on himself, you know? Like,
Hey, listen.
I know. It could have been.
He grew up in the passing boom. You never know, you know? Who knows what was going on in 2012, 2013?
That's right. 6,000, if it all breaks right, sure, you know, he could get it. I think rookie contract, are we counting the fifth-year option here?
Yeah.
Okay, fifth-year option. Ooh. I think it's like just playing the odds of how prospects work. It's under 50%, but like, well, but super in the cards. I mean, it could be 40%, right? 35-40%. Got the chances of him staying healthy, remaining on the Bears, being good. So I don't know about it's incredibly likely for like just what we're talking about, a player who has never played a single snap in the NFL. And if we just expand over the course of his entire career, it's a pretty solid bet.
Is there any, I'm curious about this. Is there any, the way it feels to me like a quarterback of instant impact and the wide receiver can have instant impact. I don't think it's necessarily either positions where you can't be good until year three or whatever. It seems to me that pairing a quarterback who's a rookie with a wide receiver is totally fine. You have DJ Moore there. If Rome's development is a little slow, you have obviously Keenan Allen there. It just seems like this is a smart strategy to pair the skill guys and let them grow together. Right.
I don't have any numbers to back that up, but to me that makes all the sense in the world. Why would you not start building that chemistry? Allen is a temporary player on that team. Like I think that is exactly what you want to do.
1 million, and also
don't leave your rookie QB without weapons. Don't leave him behind a poor offensive line. And Caleb Williams is walking into a situation where both of those are solid,
also
or great.
Yeah, and also I think sometimes we overrate the safety of linemen. Like a lot of linemen, especially tackles, especially if they're changing positions or whatever, they take a while, dude. They take a while. They take a year. They take a full year. So we got a question. I want to jump into this. I want to skip real quick. We got a question from Clark Brooks, who said, what do you think about the Titans basically taking Latham and saying you're playing left tackle or moving him from right tackle to left tackle? And I just want to use that as a jumping off point to like the safety of the tackle position, whether or not it's overrated, whether or not we need to stop saying pencil him in for 10 years, and just kind of the inherent danger there, Seth.
Both things are sort of true. Offensive linemen are safer prospects. They do hit more often. We do have a better sense of who will pan out relative to other positions. But what you said is also true. They also develop more slowly. When I've looked at this, when we look at first round tackles, so first round guys only in their rookie season, those are below average offensive linemen across the board on average in that first year. And I think it's really important from a team building standpoint. I think it's why for the Jets, for example, it was so critical that, yeah, they took a tackle, but they set themselves up to not need him because you have guys like Andrew Thomas or Laremy Tunsil, guys who ended up being elite tackles, but were really not, were liabilities or played poorly in year one. And so you have to expect that. So you just need to know that a tackle is a generally safer bet. But I think that initially, you know, there's going to be growing pains for sure.
All right, Rod asks, this is a great question. So Rod asks, after the Lions drafted running back, inside linebacker, safety, tight end, first 45 picks last year, he laughed about the positional value of those picks. They ended up drafting first-year prospects at every position. So is that value? So we got into this a little bit over the weekend where no running backs, no linebackers are drafted on day one. First time that's ever happened. When I say linebacker, the way the analyst guys were saying it was, they mean off-ball linebacker. They don't mean an edge who was listed as an LB in college, right? But there's value there because if you get the top running back, you're getting a guy who would have gone ninth in 1997, and he's still a pretty damn good football player. So to answer Rod's question, Seth, like what kind of value do you get if you're drafting linebacker one or running back one or safety one, when it's not a if it's day two and you take one of those guys?
Okay, well, that I think is the big difference. So if we're talking about the Lions draft last year.
Oh, yeah, there's two separate questions. Yes.
So let me start with the Lions and then I'll hit what you said. So if you're talking about what the Lions did last year, I don't think that result. I like, to me, I look back on that draft class and I still think that was a poor process. And I mean, they took Gibbs and Campbell in round one. I wouldn't take either player in round one today. So like, I don't think you could say it's like that amazing. They were all, the first three picks were all reaches. And yes, like Laporta has worked out great, and Gibbs, people, Gibbs is a good running back. I think there's a question about whether that's a round one player or pick 12 player, but there's a chart that our friend Ben Baldwin has that I think is really illustrative to this point, which is basically showing the value of non-quarterback position, each non-quarterback position relative to their draft pick based on their second contract. And the reason why I like that is because it's the NFL telling us how it values each position, because we're judging on free agency and second contracts and then comparing that to the draft picks. And when we look at that, the non-premium positions, running back, tight end, safety, linebacker, at the beginning of the draft, those players all pan out to have cheaper second contracts. And what that says is that those positions are being overdrafted. Hmm. Because the line should all be the same. They should all be in the same place. It should be that we push down. It's not, I'm not saying you can't draft a safety in round one. It's that we should push safety so far down that the only safety that could make it to round one is such an elite prospect that by the time they reach free agency, they get paid the same as the corners that are drafted in round one. So the market is not efficient in that way in round one. But you also asked about round two, and things really start to compress in round two. And that's where you get to the place where I think it is possible that you take linebacker one at pick 55 or something like that, or safety at pick 55. And maybe you do, that's a perfectly fine place to be. And I will stress, like, I think what's possible here, when Ben does that chart, you know, that's ending at 2019 draft class, because we got to get to everybody getting paid. Like, what if we are witnessing the league shifting correctly in the way it values positions? And so this was that. I don't know if it is. It will take time to tell. I think it's feasible. But I do not look back on the Lions draft class and feel like that was a good process draft. I still don't think so.
Scoreboard, buddy. Scoreboard. That's all I'll say. Scoreboard. Toughness and grit. We're going to send you a grit hat for that they make in Detroit. We're going to send you that, and it's going to replace your analytics hat. Jake asked, should we ding – this is an interesting question. Should we ding teams or consider it equivalent of trading up when they don't trade down when they have an offer? Looking at the Pats at 3, or teams that made picks in the early second when it seemed like there were probably offers for each pick. So that's interesting to me. Now, first of all, it's – this is just sort of ceremonial anger. Like, what do we ding teams? I'm not really sure what that means. It's you and I just talking about the process of it all, which is the most overrated thing in the world other than calling people super drafters. But it's a good point. Should we look at the cost of Drake May being 2 future first rounders because they did not take it? And this is sort of, there's probably some philosophical school of thought that applies here when we talk about just like applying a tax to yourself on opportunities not taken. But I'm curious where we're headed with that.
I think it's a great question. The answer is yes. I think we absolutely should judge teams more on not trading down. It's tricky because you don't always know what the opportunity is. It takes 2 to tango and all that. But clearly, because of the way that teams trade, we know they're not being aggressive enough in their pursuit of trading down. New England at 3, I mean, I think quarterbacks are kind of a different story. I wouldn't fault them for that. I think it is fair to look at the opportunity cost, but like, to me, I would look at a team like Tennessee at 7. They took tackle 2 there, and we know, we're pretty sure Minnesota would have been in the market to trade up, right? Could they have gotten just a little bit more than what the Jets got? Probably. And then you're getting tackle 2 versus tackle 3. The probability that you are making that assessment correctly is very close to 50%. So I think that, for example, is one that jumps out to me. I do think that we can – every single singular pick is hard to judge. When we look at a team's entire draft, we look at a GM several years, when they are not trading down, then they deserve like plenty of ire on that point, I would say.
I can't believe we have to wait a year for you to stand on the side of the draft, the draft stage, and hold a tablet and tell us who screwed up on drafting.
Yeah,
and trading. What a run that was. Get
Kevin. Can I give you one thing? We started this podcast with Eagles. We were in Eagles in the middle. And can I end something with an Eagles point really quick? Because I just forgot this and it was too good. Yesterday in day three, I got a text from someone in the league that was just like, in the last 30 minutes, the Eagles have picked up 3 future picks. Like, they're just incredible. And they did, right? They did. We're talking about day 3 trade downs. And that is another reason why they're so good. And other folks around the league are all envious of their ability and willingness to do that.
Seth Walters, our Howie Roseman. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.